stinging pain brought him awake. He was lying on thin grass, clods of dirt and pebbles pressing against his back. Dean was tying off a stitch on his stomach, working one-handed. Dean's fingers were bloody, and his face was swelling with bruises. Sam turned his head. At the foot of the trees in front of the car, he saw a pile of leaves and branches that hadn't been there before, big enough to conceal the body.
"Can you get up?"
Dean asked, whiskey rough. Sam nodded, then regretted it. He pushed himself up to sit, then, after a minute, struggled to his feet. Dean stood only a few feet away, but his arms were folded tight across his chest.
"Your shoulder?"
"Popped it back in," Dean said. He'd had to do it for Sam once, and the pain had been so excruciating that Sam had made Dean swear to knock him out first if it ever became necessary again.
"I would have..."
"I got the car fixed from what that bitch did," Dean interrupted, turning his head away.
"Can you give it a jump?"
He saw the logic in getting away from the corpse right off the road. They'd already had more luck than they deserved, bloody and helpless like this. He nodded. The cut. Stab wound. Dean had stabbed him. In his stomach. Didn't pull that much. The crumpled, sodden feeling in his lungs was more worrisome. If Ava had done enough damage, she could get her revenge from beyond the grave without coming back as a ghost. Dean stayed well away from the car while Sam put his hands on the ignition. Generating electricity wasn't that much harder than moving physical objects. It was all the same, ultimately, at the atomic level. The car rumbled to life underneath him, and he surrendered the driver's seat to Dean. Dean waited until he was all the way over to the passenger side, and didn't help him fumble the seatbelt on. But Dean didn't shove him out of the car, either. While he'd been out, the sun had passed midday and started heading for the horizon, and they were driving west now, forcing him to squint and look out the side window while he tried to work out what to say to Dean. Dean unclipped a pair of sunglasses from the visor and put them on, making his eyes as blank as the rest of his expression.
"Tell me you didn't kill my brother," Dean said at last,
his voice as shredded as if he'd been dragged along the highway for miles.
"Oh, God, he hadn't even considered that."
"I swear to you," Sam said immediately. "Dean, I found the records. Andy and Max, they weren't Samuel Winchester, but what stopped his mouth was the thought that they'd been just like baby Sam, only unlucky enough to survive for father's training. When they'd been little kids, Andy had been the closest thing Sam knew to a friend. He remembered playing leapfrog with Andy, and then a year ago Sam had just walked up and..." "And maybe Andy would have done the same to him. Maybe he could have explained to Dean how none of them were innocent, none worth saving. They were somebody else's family," he said, bowing his head and waiting.
"Okay," Dean said at last. "Okay."
He punched the steering wheel with his fist and didn't even wince.
"The only thing I want is to kill that fucking demon. You help me out there and we're golden. Don't you say my name like you know me. You know the demon. You know something about it wants. So you fucking tell me what you know."
"He never told us," Sam said hopelessly. "He always said that the last one standing would find out. It's big, though. A hell on earth big. He was always talking about ruling, crushing the world. But I don't know how." Dean snorted.
"More," he said. "Details."
Sam began. "His name is Azazel," he said, wondering if the name alone might be enough to summon Father. He told Dean about who he'd been, about Arba and the likelihood that she had a different agenda, talking until his voice was hoarse and passed until there was nothing left. They stopped for gas. Dean left him in the car. Why would he run? Leaving now would just invite Father to swoop in and grab Dean as a hostage for Sam's bad behavior. Father would probably tie Dean to real railroad tracks, just for the show-off value. When Dean returned from paying, he threw a bottle of Coke and a packet of almonds into Sam's lap. The soda was cold against his thighs. He picked it up to have something to do, turning it in his hands.
"You do like Coke, right?"
Dean asked as he turned the key in the ignition.
Or is that another lie? Because it's what I drink.
Sam scraped the label with his thumbnail, remembering the taste of it from Dean's mouth, caramel, and the bitterness of caffeine. Dean laughed to himself. Dully, Sam twisted the cap off, waiting for the foam to settle. He had to be ready for what came next. Assuming that Ava had been telling the truth, he'd just become the linchpin in Father's grand design. Saving people? That was no lie, he said. Changed my mind. You showed me... He didn't see Dean's hand move, but the cool circle of a pistol barrel pressed into the skin of his temple. The car wobbled a little, with only Dean's sore left arm to guide it.
Don't even, Dean warned.
Dean hated him. Dean was still going to hate him when this was over.
To it, he said, closing his eyes. Fuck up his plan, it's the only way to be sure.
Dean's trembling breath was louder than the thrum of the engine. The gun dragged along Sam's skin, hard enough to leave a mark.
Fuck,
Dean snarled, pulling the gun away and shoving it behind his back.
He'd just start again, wouldn't he? No fucking way.
That was all he'd say. The car seemed huge, Dean telescoping away from him, a leather and iron cage built just for him. Dean got them a single room at a Best Western. Cream walls, square headboards, faded bedspreads. Sam wasn't just going to follow him around like some abandoned puppy. He had his pride. He was going to do the right thing, but he didn't have to grovel the entire time. Except that when Dean casually shoved him down onto the bed, so hard that he felt a stitch pop on his abdomen in a warm rush, he didn't even raise a hand. Dean growled, climbing onto the bed on his knees and ripped at Sam's belt, thumbing open the button of his jeans and jerking them down over his hips with a strength that just forced the zipper to give. For all of that, Dean's hand on his cock was gentle, slow, and knowing. Sam gasped and closed his eyes. He expected Dean to stop, turn him over, and fuck him, maybe. He didn't bite him often, but Dean always liked it well enough. But Dean just kept going, steady pressure rolling through him, getting him past the pain of his injuries. When Sam opened his eyes again, trying not to come, Dean had propped himself up on one elbow, on his side next to Sam, as if nothing were wrong. His head dipped down, his nose brushing the curve of Sam's ear while Sam mindlessly raised his hips into Dean's touch.
"You want my mouth?" Dean whispered. Was it the cock-sucking lips he liked best? Or maybe he switched sides because of the magical power of my ass?
Sam didn't try to hide how he flinched at each sentence.
"It was you," he said helplessly.
"Bullshit," Dean said, and ran his thumb up the center of Sam's dick, pressing down at the rim of the head. Sam gasped and his eyes fluttered closed. Dean continued, not even breathing hard.
"You think I wasn't listening all this afternoon? You and your awful childhood? You hate your father. Hell, you hate my dad on principle. You were looking for a way out. But you couldn't tell me the truth. You had to keep your options open, right?"
Sam forced his eyes open, raising his head and flailing at Dean, grabbing for his shoulder until Dean pulled his upper body away, still without loosening his hold on Sam's cock.
"I was going to tell you," Sam begged.
Dean smiled, beautiful and dead-eyed.
"Yeah, well, I was going to kill the demon and live happily ever after. Guess we both suck at predicting the future."
He twisted his wrist just right, and Sam came all over Dean's hand and his own stomach, blood and cum staining the bandage over the stab wound, but he didn't have the energy to clean up. Dean rolled off the bed and went into the bathroom, shutting the door behind him deliberately. The water went on and stayed on for a long time. Sam came awake screaming, the pain in his lungs quickly overwhelming the boxing match going on in his head. When he pulled himself together, he saw Dean crouched by his bed, gun in hand, mouth pursed grimly. He blinked feebly and swiped at his nose, clearing off some of the blood.
"Ears too," Dean said tonelessly.
You told me vampires were extinct," was all he could think to say.
"The fuck are you talking about?"
Dean rubbed at his eyes with his free hand.
Vampires, Dean. I saw these things come through a skylight in this cabin. They practically tore him apart. They ripped his throat out and drank his blood. The teeth. Hold on, Dean ordered. Go get cleaned up. Sam's head was still ringing like he'd been the pinball in a high-scoring game. He forced himself to his feet and shuffled into the bathroom. It was perfectly anonymous, not a hint of character, and the unrelieved white counter, tiles, towels, shower curtain, pounded on his aching eyes and aching head until he turned off the light and washed up in the minimal glow from the illuminated light switch plate. When he returned to the main room, Dean was sitting in a chair by the window, one leg slung over the opposite knee, the gun in his lap and his hands on the thin square arms of the chair. He turned his head from the view of the parking lot and examined Sam. Did the visions come from him? Azazel, he clarified. I don't know, Sam admitted. The power does, but that's not... I don't think it's the same thing. He thought about it as his head began to clear. I'm pretty sure the visions are truth, just like the other powers really work. Otherwise, what would he need with you? Dean agreed. So, this thing you saw, with the vampires, it's gonna happen soon? Sam scratched a line of blood drying under his earlobe. I think maybe it already has. The vision felt different. Talk, Dean said, and Sam did. The multiple vampires, the fierceness of their attack, the gun they'd stolen so deliberately, the scratches the man had left on the floor in his last moments. Before they went to breakfast, Sam went online and found the report of the inexplicable mauling of Daniel Elkins in Colorado. Dean flipped through his father's journal until he found the same name, and they were off. He was so focused on the hunt that he kept forgetting and talking to Sam like they were still partners. It made the moments when he remembered and shut himself off even more painful. Once they'd identified Elkins, it wasn't hard to figure out that the message he left was a post office box with a combination. And then, moments later it seemed, they were in Colorado, sitting in the car in the post office parking lot, and holding a letter for John Winchester. Dean stared at it for several minutes, then decisively flipped it open and stuck his thumbnail under the edge of the flap. The knock on the driver's side window made them both jump. John Winchester grinned at them. Sam swallowed his curse as Dean rolled down the window. Dad? Dean said, and Sam could finally hear the joy in it, as well as the desperate hope, the fear that he wouldn't be good enough once again. Dean. He opened the back door and slung himself inside. Sam? John? Sam managed without choking, which he considered a victory of sorts. What's going on? Dean asked, twisting in his seat to see his father, even though Sam knew that had to be extremely painful, just as it was for Sam to turn enough towards the back for conversation. You knew this guy, right? Yeah. John acknowledged. He was a good man. Taught me a hell of a lot about hunting. Dean frowned. I don't remember him. John reached out, getting halfway to Dean before he pulled his hand back. It was real early on. We had kind of a falling out. I haven't seen him in years. Sam wondered whether the falling out had anything to do with John's willingness to take a little kid on hunts. Let me see that, John ordered, and Dean, of course, handed the letter right over. If you're reading this, I'm already dead, he began. Son of a... What? Dean asked. He had it the entire time, John muttered. Had what? John ignored him. I have to go up to the cabin, he said. There should be something that I need. You mean the old revolver? Dean asked, glaring at Sam. John looked at Sam like he'd just burst into song. How do you... Sam here sees things sometimes. Dean's mouth snapped shut, his jawbone standing out beneath the stubble. Sees things, John repeated. He's a psychic, like Missouri, only more active. Sam was pretty sure the only reason John didn't pull a gun on him right then was that he didn't get that things had changed between Dean and Sam. He tried to maintain his attitude in the face of John's suspicious inspection, but found himself dropping his eyes. "The gun, Dad," Dean prodded. "We've got to get it," John said, startled back into business. "Did he see anything that lets us pick up their trail?" "Us?" Sam blurted. "Now you want company?" He swallowed and looked past both Winchester frowns. John spoke as if every word was being pushed past a mouthful of bullets. "If Elkins was telling the truth, we need this gun." "Why?" Sam asked, because there was no point in trying to placate either of them right now. "Because it's important, that's why," John said. "Yes, sir," Dean said, before Sam could further go into it with John. So it was fine for the sainted John Winchester to withhold any information he liked. Sam swallowed his protest. It wasn't really hypocrisy, no matter what it felt like. As Dean pumped his father for information about vampires, in his eager tone, Sam could hear the kid Dean had been, terrified of not being good enough. John, though, just answered with short declarative sentences. No cross, no stake, no sunlight, just beheading by raw force. So it was the same as before. John gave the orders, Dean jumped, and Sam seethed. He knew he was digging himself deeper away from Dean, but he couldn't seem to stop. The bastard had the gall to criticize how Dean treated the Impala, and all Dean did was duck his head and nod. While John was off talking to the policemen investigating the disappearance of a young couple, presumably vampire victims, Dean leaned toward Sam and poked him in the shoulder, hard. "Do you want me to put a bullet in you? Because you're heading there at 80 miles an hour." Sam turned his head deliberately away, staring at the police cruiser parked 60 feet away. "Jesus," Dean cursed. "I don't need this." "Maybe you can just turn off how you feel," Sam snapped. "But I can't, okay? And how he treats you, it's bullshit. You're not a kid. You're the best goddamn hunter there is, and keeping information from you is gonna get you killed, and I..." He buried his head in his hands so that he didn't have to see Dean's face. His palms were slippery wet. His chest hurt like a bulldozer had run over it. And even the cut in his stomach was protesting how he was curling up into himself. He had gotten the sobs down into little hiccups when he felt Dean's fingers, tentative, on his upper arm. "Hey," Dean said softly, and the shell of control Sam had managed to build up cracked all over again. "Hey," Dean repeated, and shoved his handkerchief into Sam's hands. Sam wiped his fingers and his palms dry, then blew his nose. Dean flexed and released his fingers on the steering wheel. "I'll ask him," he said, when Sam finally managed to meet his eyes. "But not with you around." He snorted then, unhappily. "Jesus, how can I trust you around him?" Sam opened his mouth to point out that Dean had put his own life in Sam's hands. But Dean put a different value on his father's life, and Sam just couldn't hear that right now. So instead, he looked at the window, away from Dean, and listened to Dean sigh and shift in the seat until John returned. In the end, John did give Dean the details on the gun, the Colt, which Sam would never have known just by looking at it. Why Samuel Colt would have been able to make a gun that could kill any supernatural thing remained unclear to Sam, but John's hope had transmitted itself to Dean. Sam was impressed with John's courage when John gave him the plan of just walking into the lair. Courage, not brains, but burning the whole place down would likely melt the Colt as well, so he understood the decision. Despite what John had told him about vampire habits, he hadn't expected there to be human captives. Dean got to work on the cage while Sam went for the woman who was tied to the bed. She stirred as Dean popped the hinge on the cage. "Shh," Sam warned, leaning over her. "We're here to help you." She opened her eyes. Then she started to scream, and Sam saw the extra row of teeth. He raised his machete, prepared to do battle. The thud from the next room brought Dean's head up, and then John was screaming at them to run. Sam couldn't hold all the vampires back with the TK, especially not the ones he couldn't see, so he hauled ass out into the sunlight. "They have our scent for life?" he repeated disbelievingly when they'd retreated to John's motel room. "Why was that not a part of the initial lecture?" John lowered his brows and shrugged, as if suggesting that caring about being targeted for death by super-strong vampires was a mark of cowardice. Dean looked like he wanted to imitate John, but couldn't quite deny the justice of the complaint. "We need dead man's blood," John said, as if that were the end of it. Dean had never shown Sam how to use a crossbow, so he was the bait. It was a damn good thing John wanted that gun so badly, otherwise Sam never would have gotten next to something John was planning to shoot. When they captured two of the vampires by shooting them with arrows tipped in dead man's blood, John pronounced them lucky. One was the leader's mate, which meant that they now had something to trade for the cult. He decapitated the other, while Dean and Sam watched. Sam was beginning to get the feeling that John Winchester just might make a serious opponent for Father. And then he had to go and ruin it with his moronic fucking plan of making the trade on his own. "I'm trying to keep you safe," he explained to Dean, ignoring Sam. Sam drew in a breath, prepared to risk Dean's wrath, but, "All due respect, that's crap, Dad."
"Excuse me?"
John said, and for once, he and Sam were in perfect agreement.
"You know what I've been hunting. You sent us on hunts. You can't be that worried about keeping me safe."
John blinked.
"This demon, it's different. I can't do what I have to if I'm worried about keeping you alive."
Dean stood like an oak, brutal and strong.
"You mean you can't just go in expecting to die if I'm with you?"
John turned so that he didn't have to see Dean's face anymore.
"Dean, your mother's, Sam's death, that almost killed me. I can't watch you die too. I won't."
"But it's okay for me," Dean said.
"It's okay for you to walk off and leave me alone when I could help."
John shook his head.
"You're not alone anymore."
The words rolled into the clearing like a grenade with its pinpoint. Dean only snorted and crossed his arms over his chest.
"We're stronger together, Dad. You know it."
John turned away.
"We're running out of time. You do your job, you save those people, you get out of the area. It's an order."
He started to walk. Dean and Sam looked at each other, alone in the clearing with the decapitated corpse.
"I don't know what the hell to do with you," Dean said. "But I know one thing.
We're going after him."
Dean didn't comment on the plural.
With everything so precarious, the hunt was somehow better than ever. He slotted into place effortlessly, guarding Dean's back as he freed the captives, swinging the knife in perfect arcs to dispatch the vampires, running to the car to make it to the place John was negotiating with the vampire leader. Shockingly, the trade hadn't gone as John had expected. His hostage had knocked him over and was advancing on him just as they arrived. Dean managed to shoot a couple of vampires from cover, but then they had to go in. In the melee, Sam lost his machete, but he saw the colt on the ground, ignored. He heard the vampire leader yell and felt Dean stop flat. Whipping his head around, Sam saw the leader had John by the neck.
"I'll break his neck," the vampire warned. "Put the crossbow down," he continued, when Dean didn't move.
After a moment, the vampire tightened his grip on John's throat. Dean slowly knelt, his eyes locked on his father. Sam remembered himself and called the gun over. It sailed into his palm with a soft slap. No one was even watching, too caught up in the more dramatic standoff.
"You people," the vampire said bitterly. "Why can't you just leave us alone? We have as much a right to live as you do."
"I call logical fallacy," Sam said. The leader swiveled, dragging his hostage with him as if John were as light as a raincoat. Sam shot the vampire in the head. The results were extremely dramatic. Yellow, crackling lightning, enveloping his head and then moving down to his body, eating inwards rapidly until he was a blackened, twisting corpse. Sam reached out with his senses. The vampire dwindled into nothing. Not hellbound, just dead. He had it now. Confirmation that the cult would do what was promised. The leader's mate screamed and lunged for Sam, but another one of the remaining vampires grabbed her and pulled her away.
"So, you ignored a direct order," John said, walking into their room while Dean was still messing with his bag.
"Yes, sir," Dean said. He spent a moment tugging at the zipper, making sure the duffel was completely closed.
"And we saved your ass."
John sighed.
"You're right."
Dean nearly fell over.
"I am?" "I don't like it, but..."
"Dean, you're a grown man. I'm ready to go after this thing. Together."
"Yes, sir,"
Dean said fervently. John turned to Sam.
"That includes you."
It was almost not even grudging. Sam tried not to look surprised, but doubted he pulled it off.
"Of course," he agreed.
"Now," John said, stepping over to the dresser so that he could stand where he could see them both. "Tell me about these visions Sam has, the ones you didn't mention when I met him."
Sam looked at Dean. Even if things weren't destroyed between them, telling John the full truth was going to get Sam extremely dead, extremely fast. But he couldn't lie, not in front of Dean.
Dean surprised him again.
"Wasn't sure you cared to know. Till recently, they were just about our hunts, not the demon."
"If it affects you, I need to know." Dean snorted.
"What's that supposed to mean?"
John's voice was ocean deep, impatient.
"Come on, Dad. You didn't answer your phone for a year. I called you from Lawrence. Sam called and begged you to come when I was dying."
Sam gaped at him. He hadn't known that Dean was even aware of that.
"And there was nothing. Demons you got time for, but visions about me? You didn't want the live version. Why would you care about the instant replay?"
John flinched and crossed the room towards them. Dean stood to meet him, his back a tight line. Sam couldn't see his face, but John's was angry.
"Dean!"
He stopped, rubbed a hand over his face.
"I'm sorry if I made you think that. I should have been there for you."
About half of the tension drained out of Dean. Sam wanted Dean to stay angry, but mostly he wanted to be able to stay angry at John himself. That was a dead end. It wouldn't help him use his rage to get anything he wanted.
"The visions don't happen on command," Dean said, conciliatory. They've helped us find hunts, like with Elkins."
John shifted his focus to Sam, with nearly palpable relief.
"Have you seen anything? Anything about the demon?"
If Dean didn't get his wide-eyed liar look under control quickly, John was going to know that something was very wrong. But John only had eyes for Sam right now. Sam swallowed.
"Its name is Azazel," he said.
Can you use that?" Like that, John was off, mumbling something about research. "We'll stay here tonight," he announced on his way out.
You boys have a good night."
The door slammed behind him. Dean's befuddled expression was probably close to Sam's own.
"I guess I'll go pay for another night," Sam said after a moment.
"We're not okay," Dean said, when Sam had his hand on the doorknob. Sam stiffened, but didn't turn, couldn't force himself to look at Dean's face. Dean blew out a loud breath.
"Fuck, I should have known all that shit about being a team. You must have been laughing at that, right?"
"I never laughed," Sam said thickly. "Dean, I never..."
"I can't do this now,"
Dean said, like a jail door swinging shut.
"If you're on my side, then you'll shut up and go along to advise to Azazel."
"You know you're part of his plan," Sam said, still facing the emergency exit map. It had a little red X. "You are here."
"He sent me to you." "If I believed that, I'd put a bullet in my own head."
He flinched, but there was an easy answer to that, and it was even true.
"Sacrificing yourself?
That might be what he needs. He'd love that. That's not how I plan it, but I don't care who walks away at the end, as long as it's not him. Sam put his forehead on the hollow plastic motel door and just leaned into it until he could see again. John shared his research, explaining that he picked up the demon's trail nearly a year ago, which was what prompted his Dean dump. Sam hadn't asked Dean about it, but he assumed that Dean had come to the same conclusion as he had. This was deliberate manipulation by Father. But Sam hadn't known what bait Father had used. He hadn't known that children and their mothers were dying again. "Why didn't you tell me?" Dean asked John when he'd heard the story. His voice was low, almost incurious, as if he was pretty sure he knew the answer and was asking against his better judgment. Sam had never hated John Winchester more for getting his chance to explain. John shifted on his feet, refusing to meet Dean's eyes. Sam wanted to shout at him. Tell Dean that there was never anything wrong with him. Tell him that you were stupid, but that you only meant to protect him. I didn't want to get your hopes up, John said finally. Sam wanted to get up and hit him, except he was trying not to call further attention to himself. Dean just sat back down on the unmade bed and braced his elbow on his knee, hiding his face in his hand. We did this, you and I. Sam thought at John. We took all his choices away, even though we both knew who he was. If he could have, Sam would have made the son run backwards and undone everything since they'd met. Unconditional support from now on was a pitiful next best, but it was all he had. When John went on a meal run, Dean asked another relevant question. Was that true, that your mom died when you were 6 months old? He asked, speaking as softly as if he might be overheard. I was just pulling it out of my ass, Sam admitted. But with all this, I think maybe I might have sensed more than I knew. Dean nodded. He could be rebuilding, in case he screws up this round. Maybe he just did it to give me a chance with you. Dean tilted his head, eyes narrowing. Those kids, that isn't your fault. Sam frowned. Now Dean chose to let him off the hook? No, but it's my problem. Dean slapped his thigh in exasperation. Right, in 18 years there might be competition. Dean? Yeah, whatever. One way or another, those kids aren't going to have the same thing happen to them. Maybe it would have been smarter to leave Dean with John and strike out on his own. But Father had gone to a great deal of trouble to get Dean involved, and Sam still had no idea why. There were demonic rituals that required the sacrifice of a pure soul of some kind, or a warrior. The problem was, Sam could identify at least 50 of them, and not a one generated enough power to open the gates of hell. John had figured out the pattern of strange weather and unexplained deaths that preceded one of Father's visits to a family. Sam wasn't sure whether this was intentional or a mere side effect of Father's powers, but it did offer a wonderful tracking opportunity. And now the signs were present in Salvation, Iowa, which had to be an ironic gesture on Father's part. Sam made the drive with Dean in silence, occupying himself with reviewing John's research in case something jumped out at him. Nothing did, but reading about the new deaths was a sharp reminder of why Dean was still putting up with him. Dean was being professional, the only thing left for him to be. And Sam needed to emulate that. He told Dean to shoot him, but it turned out that it was much harder to live with what he'd done. Living with it in order to take Father out was exactly what he owed Dean. No sooner had they passed the town line than John got news that one of his close friends had died. He stopped his truck, even though it was raining, and pulled off the road, so they did the same. When Dean hurried over to check on him, a ghost-faced John told him that a demon had killed Pastor Jim. Dean took it hard. Sam thought that the grief made him forget how angry he was at Sam. In the car on the way to the first hospital they were checking, he told Sam that the pastor had been a good friend to him growing up. Sam wondered if Dean had ever had a friend close to his own age, but that was an old, second-hand regret. No time for it now. Coming out of the hospital, rain spattering on his face like slow tears, the vision slammed into him like an out-of-control car. Each image was a shard of glass driving into his brain. The noise corkscrewed into his ears, making him whine in sympathy. There was a nursery and a baby
and a child on fire. A couple of nurses on their cigarette break, hiding from the drizzle under the short lip of the building, saw him stagger and grab his head. He had to talk fast to avoid being admitted to the ER. And then he had to search the map, looking for the train tracks to match the train he'd heard along with the vision. It was either their good luck or Father's clever construction of a trap that put them in a small town, because the train only went through a small residential area. He called Dean and let him know about the vision, then started jogging towards the right part of town. The slowly dwindling rain felt good on his abused head. He had every intention of waiting for Dean, until the woman from his vision nearly ran over his toe with her stroller. "Oh, excuse me," she said, fumbling with her umbrella. She was Monica. Her child was Rosie. Sam told her he was visiting town, thinking of moving, and prayed she wouldn't ask him why anyone would move to Salvation. But she was more interested in showing off her just 6-month-old baby girl, who seemed pleasant enough. Monica swore that Rosie looked at people as if she could read minds. The fact that Rosie didn't immediately burst into tears when she looked up at Sam was evidence to the contrary, but he wasn't ruling it out. Monica left him on the street, waving goodbye just as he heard the growl of the Impala's engine. The car pulled up next to him. He leaned in to open the door. The vision hit like a broken bone on top of a sprain. He'd never had two in such quick succession. His brain felt like it was going to burst out through his eye sockets as it liquefied. He saw Monica hurrying into Rosie's room, then thrown to the ceiling, split across the middle, bleeding down as she lit up like she was made of paper. Then the vision changed. It wasn't the same room or the same woman. It was Mary Winchester, whom he'd seen burst into flames in Lawrence. She looked just like Monica when she disappeared under the orange yellow fire. He came back to coherence lying down. His head felt wet and cold, and under that was the distant drumbeat of a fading headache. He opened his eyes and carefully turned his head to the side. He was in a room he'd never seen before, dingy but unremarkable, as if Dean hadn't given much thought to the choice. Dean himself was slumped over a side table, asleep in his leather jacket. He didn't want to get up for fear of tempting the headache to worsen. "Dean?" Dean pulled himself upright like he was tearing off a bandage. "You gotta stop doing that," he yawned as he stumbled over to Sam. With Dean's hands urging him up, he managed to get himself sitting against the headboard without vomiting. Dean gave him a few sips of flat-tasting orange juice from a wobbly plastic cup and made him take to a leave. What happened?" Sam asked after he swallowed the pills. "You pitched a fit and landed right in my lap," Dean said. "Bled like something out of Kill Bill." He took Sam's face in his hands, his thumbs rubbing the tired skin under Sam's eyes, tilting his head back and forth as if looking for renewed bleeding. Sam tried not to read too much into the touch, but his heart still pounded painfully and his fingers itched to reach out for Dean in return. Forcing himself to face reality, Sam quickly summarized the visions. Dean didn't like the plural, especially didn't like the mention of his mother. "He's coming tonight," Sam concluded, "but it feels bad." "You're sure it's him, Azazel?" Sam shrugged. The motion set his head ringing again. "He can possess any body. I saw a man who could have been him." A key scraped in the door, and John Winchester walked in, holding what looked like a bag of takeout. Dean shifted a few inches away from Sam on the bed, but he didn't get up. "You're up," John said, sounding dubious about it. "It was another vision," Dean told him. "This time about the demon." Sam straightened himself further, shoulders pushing up against the carved wood of the headboard. "Azazel's coming for that family tonight." "Then we'll be there to stop it," John said. Sam's cell phone trilled out from the end table where Dean must have tossed it. They all froze for a moment. Then Sam reached out tentatively. "Hello?" Sam said. "Samuel!" Arba cooed. "Arba," he said grimly, then covered the speaker. "The demon that's possessing Meg." Dean nodded and waved his father's protest silent. "Put me on speaker. I've got things to say to the lot of you." "I don't think so." He made himself sit up, planting his legs on the floor, feigning strength. Why, afraid I'll rat you out?
The thought had crossed my mind. Dean and John were watching him like snakes hypnotized by a mongoose. Every muscle in John's body was tightened, as if they were a second away from lunging for the phone himself.
It's sweet that you still care. Love isn't as easy as it seemed, is it? First, you had to get into young Dean's head, not to mention his pants. But you're not the only one in his world. Kind of blows, doesn't it? All those tangled webs humans weave, sucking each other dry. Who do you think Dean would choose if I made him?
What do you want?
It didn't come out as commanding as he'd hoped. She chuckled. You've put yourself in an enviable position, young man. You have the cult, and you have Daddy's blessing. I need a little leverage. I want the cult.
Arba's assumptions about how much John and Dean trusted him stung a little.
Why would we give you the cult?
John jerked forward at that, and I took Dean's hand on his shoulder to keep him from grabbing Sam. Sam stood up warily as Arba continued.
I just killed Jim Murphy, and I'm working with John's friend Caleb in Lincoln right now. Sure you don't want this on speaker?
He didn't, but Caleb's protest and blood-drenched death were audible anyway.
I'm going to keep killing every one of their allies until you hand the cult over. Anyone who ever helped them, anyone who gave them shelter, anyone they ever smiled at.
He couldn't point out that Arba was assuming that he cared, because he couldn't claim to be in charge while John was listening, even if Dean would forgive the lie. In fact, the conversation was untenable, which gave him only one option. He ended the call.
John was already yelling before he brought the phone down from his ear, and Dean wasn't far behind.
Your friend Caleb is dead, he told them, and there'll be more. She wants the colt. That silenced them for a couple of seconds.
Why?
Dean asked, when the shock had begun to fade.
Demon politics, I'm guessing. A demon capable of inflicting true death on another demon would have a lot of leverage.
You got this from your visions, John said.
He didn't sound like he believed it.
Dean's eyes whipped from Sam to John.
We've been doing a lot of research, Dean began.
The first thing to do is stop the attack tonight, Sam said. Not only to change the subject.
John nodded. I'll take the colt to the house, he said. No demon is destroying that family.
Sam closed his eyes. For a moment, he wondered why this baby should get to escape. With their intervention, Rosie could have a mother and learn to use her powers, if they ever manifested, on her own and not in a constant cage match. He remembered the serious little face from the morning, imagining that uninterrupted life, full of 1,000 ordinary disasters and everyday joys, was enough to make him want it for her. Everybody should be able to be a civilian.
What about Arba? Dean asked.
She'll call back if she wants the colt that bad. Here's the plan, John said.
I won't do it, Dean said. I won't split up. This isn't a democracy, John said right back, his face granite.
Dad, Dean said, so close to tears Sam could practically taste them. I don't want you to get hurt.
John closed his eyes, then took the colt off the table in front of him. He put it in his lap and ran his fingers over it like a man petting a cat.
And I don't want Mary and Sam to be dead. I don't want a demon to have ruined our lives. I don't want any of this. I just want it to be over.
Sam had the feeling that John didn't have the slightest idea what his words meant, what Dean heard. But the little speech worked. Dean shut up and went to go acquire the fake gun from one of John's seemingly infinite number of contacts.
You're a real piece of work, Sam told John once the door had closed on Dean.
John was leaning over, one hand cupping his chin as his elbows rested on his knees, his whole pose one of exhaustion. His head came up when Sam spoke.
You want to get into it with me, boy? Here and now?
Not particularly, Sam admitted. But I'll take a rain check if you're planning to stick around to honor it.
John snorted and sat back in his chair, the colt still in his lap like he was afraid it would float away if he let go.
Sam Marshall, he said,
almost contemplatively. Not an uncommon name, but you don't match any of the pictures or ages in any federal database. Now, every person I talk to says the same thing. Dean and Sam, they're a perfect team. They'll kill anything that even thinks about doing evil. So I've let it slide. You want me in Dean's life so bad? You think about what I might do there. The desire to say that Dean knew everything was a bolus in his throat, impossible to breathe around. But knowing and forgiving were two different things, and using Dean's knowledge to score points with his father felt like a lie. Sam swallowed his anger and stomped out to check the weapons in the Impala. The fake Colt looked pretty much like the real one, though Dean swore that there were 5 obvious differences and 7 that required a minute's inspection. The only reassurance was that Sam was reasonably confident that Arba wasn't as much of a buff as Dean. Arba called back within a few hours. Ready to deal?
Yeah,
Sam said, not giving her the satisfaction of anything more. She provided an address at a time. Midnight, of course. How very fucking typical.
We've got to haul ass to Lincoln, he said as soon as he shut the phone. Warehouse there.
The car was already loaded. Dean paused to hug his father. Neither of them seemed comfortable doing it, but Dean stood a little straighter when he pulled back.
See you soon, John said,
and Dean nodded without looking at him. Sam climbed in the car. John Winchester was the man father's plans had made. They were all caught up in a cycle of misery, cutting deeper every time the wheel turned. Growing up, Sam had always known that there was no one to rely on, because father could always offer something to tempt any alliance into defections. But now, here, he thought there might be a chance to sabotage the infernal machine.
You could go with him, Sam pointed out, before Dean started the car.
Dean swallowed and turned on the headlights.
Yeah, like I'm letting you out of my sight.
Anyway, Dad can handle himself. We all know this is a trap, right? Sam asked over the engine starting grumbles. If Arba gets me and the Colt...
That's why she's not getting the Colt,
Dean said, far too pragmatically for Sam's taste. Only 4 bullets left, can't waste them. Whereas I'm expendable, Sam thought.
We're gonna finish this, Dean said.
Dean, I want you to know, just in case...
Fuck no,
Dean said, and reached to twist the radio on, loud.
No way you're getting off that easy.
Before they went into the warehouse, Dean insisted on breaking into the system and blessing the water supply. Don't you have to be ordained to bless holy water? Sam asked. Dean grinned mirthlessly up from his crouch, where he had his hands deep in the guts of a maintenance box. You're looking at an ordained minister of the Revised Anglican Church. Sam frowned, distracted. You don't even believe in God.
I believe in holy water,
Dean said, and turned back to his blessing.
Honey, I'm home,
Dean called out as they entered the main area of the warehouse. Sam felt the same itch at the back of his skull he remembered from their first fight with Arba. She'd warded the place to make his TK inoperative. Mind me why we're doing this again? Buying time, Dean said, almost too softly to hear. They stopped only a few feet inside the main room, next to a stack of wooden pallets taller than Sam. Prey never benefited from being out in the open. Sam nodded, then scanned around again, still seeing nothing but dusty ropes and abandoned boxes. Hope for John Winchester, thumped painfully in his chest. If it isn't frickin' frack, Arba said from the side of the room. They turned, shoulder to shoulder. Sam put his hand on his gun for reassurance. Arba was standing next to an unfamiliar man, tallish and crisp-featured, brown hair as short as Dean's, but not as pretty. Ready to hand it over?
Aren't you even going to pretend we'll be safe if we do?
Sam asked. Arba rolled her eyes. I could do that, and you could pretend to believe me, but wouldn't it be simpler to just cut straight to the bleeding?
Fine,
Dean said, getting down on one knee so he could spin the Colt across the floor. It came to a stop about 5 feet from Arba. Tom, Arba ordered.
Tom? Demon's name Tom. What's the world coming to? Dean said to no one in particular. It was pretty much the same thing Sam was thinking. Tom hurried forward and scooped up the gun, examining it carefully. Fuck, she brought her own gun nut, Sam thought, preparing to start shooting. Well, Barbara snapped, is it the Colt? Tom stuck out his lower lip a little, thoughtfully. Then he brought the gun up and shot Arba in the chest. Hey! She yelled, looking down at the dark, nearly bloodless hole in the center of her white shirt, her hands rising to paw at herself.
It's a fake, Tom drawled.
Arba closed her mouth and snapped her head up. Dean shrugged. Then they ran, ducking behind the pallets to get out of her line of sight. Arba screamed, and the pallets lurched at them, nearly pinning Sam to the wall before they made it to the corridor. Dean began chanting in Latin. Arba yelled back a curse involving Dean's mother that Sam deeply hoped Dean didn't understand. Exorcism or not, they were badly outmatched without the TK. Dean pushed Sam ahead of him, around a turn, and right into Tom. Sam slammed into him at speed, nearly falling backwards with the shock of it. Then he was flying, not falling, shoved back against the corridor wall with bits of broken wood and stray stapled notices digging into his back. Tom held him pinned easily, none of Sam's ingrained mental defenses effective. Dean fired his gun, emptying his gun in not much more than a second. Tom's body shifted with the impacts, but his grip on Sam didn't loosen. The empty clip clattered to the ground, and then Dean was firing again, this time straight into Tom's face. That might have been a bad idea. If there was anything worse than being pinned by demon powers, it was being pinned by demon powers by a possessed body with no face left. "I'm gonna make you eat this," Arba said in his ear, shoving the fake Colt in his face. A human body can only take so much, even strengthened by demonic energies. Tom's is going to have to fall apart soon. Sam struggled for breath. "Kill me, and Father's gonna assign a torturer to each part of your body." Arba's eyes darkened with annoyance. Oh, sweet talker, you don't need legs for his plans. Or maybe I'll just take your boy here, stick the gun in him, and pull the trigger. Same thing, Sam said, seeing sparkles at the edge of his vision. I was sent to get him. Oh, honey, she whispered, syrupy and mocking. You just don't get it, do you? Get what? He asked, knowing himself for a fool. Tom's overtaxed body released him as the demon spewed out of the already dead man. As Sam fell a foot to the floor, he spat Christ's name at Arba. She reared back, right into an arc of holy water that went immediately to steam around her. Sam propped himself up against the wall and saw Dean holding a dripping bucket. He must have gone scrounging for it after the shooting failed. As Arba screamed and smoked, Dean grabbed his arm and they ran towards the exit. Water was cascading across the floor, evidence of Dean's activities. They splashed through it, nearly losing their footing a couple of times, and ran back to the car. No doubt, Arba would find a way around the holy water swiftly enough. At worst, she could jump out another window. "He's not answering his phone," Dean snarled, flipping his cell closed with one hand, and swerving to avoid some invisible obstacle with the other. "Let me try," Sam told him. "You keep dialing and you're going to kill us both." "He promised," Dean said, which Sam didn't remember. But he wasn't about to say that, and even more, he wasn't about to reassure Dean that John was probably just dead, not ignoring his son. In lieu of commentary, he held out his hand for the phone. Dean made a pissed-off sound, but he handed it over. They often drove late nights, and Sam had come to enjoy the way the world narrowed to headlights cutting through the night. The highway a through line pulling them across the face of the earth, the darkness inside the car warm and unthreatening. Now all that was lost. Dean was barely present, yearning towards John, and Sam knew that Father was out there as well. He remembered Father's hands, clamping down on his shoulders while Father read his homework over his shoulder. He remembered how Father would make little spider steps with his fingertips all the way down Sam's arm, chuckling as Sam grew ever more still against the touch. "If it comes to it," he said, "I'd rather be dead than do what Azazel wants. You get me?" "Shut up," Dean answered. No, this isn't just about us anymore. This is about everybody he's gonna hurt. Everybody he's gonna use me to hurt. Dean's mouth was pinched painfully. His shoulders drawn up so far, his neck nearly disappeared into his jacket. What, not good enough to sacrifice myself?
Not gonna happen, Dean roared, and they both flinched.
Then it won't make a difference for you to promise, Sam said inexorably. Dean's phone buzzed, startling Sam so bad that he nearly dropped it. There was a new message. He put the speaker on and dialed in.
I missed, John said, over some loud background noise. I missed, and I have to go get the baby now. I'm leaving the colt in a devil's trap under a pile of leaves in the front yard. You come and get it before anything happens to it.
I'll start calling hospitals. Sam reached for his own phone, but it came alive in his hand before he could start to dial.
Yes?
Nice try, kids, Barbara's voice said. No, really, nice try. Playtime's over now, though. You're never going to see Daddy Winchester again. Ready to open your eyes and face facts?
The phone clicked off with a sound like a gun dry firing.
They sped back to Salvation. Dean snuck past the firefighters still working on the smoldering ruins, while Sam walked straight up to the fire captain. He was perfectly willing to tell an insurance investigator that an unknown man had roused the household and carried the baby to safety before disappearing.
3 bullets left, Dean told them, when they were back in the car.
What now?
Dean had been about 2 pieces of duct tape away from shaking apart since Arba's taunting call, and now that they'd retrieved the colt, Sam thought he might lose it completely. He was letting Dean drive because he feared what Dean would do in the passenger seat more than he feared an accident, but it was close.
Bobby Singer, Dean said after a minute. He knows his demons.
He started the car and turned them towards the interstate.
Bobby Singer turned out to be the red-necked hunter Sam had imagined Dean to be all those months ago, a grizzled man with a full beard and a baseball cap over squinty blue eyes. Dean gave him the gist of the problem standing in the dirt in front of the steps of his house, talking straight into the barrel of Bobby's shotgun, while Sam kept his attention on the very angry-looking dogs that hovered well within biting distance. As soon as they stepped inside Bobby's house, he stood the shotgun just inside the door and held out 2 flasks. He made Dean and Sam toss back holy water, then whiskey, watching Sam just as carefully with the whiskey as with the holy water. Dean handed back the 2nd flask and wiped his mouth dry with the back of his hand.
Thanks, Bobby. I'll tell you the truth, I wasn't sure we should come.
Nonsense, he said, old-fashioned and righteous. Your daddy's in trouble.
Dean winced.
Last time we saw you, you did threaten to blast him full of buckshot. Cock the shotgun and everything.
What can I say? John just has that effect on people.
Mr. Singer, Sam said, his mouth still stinging from the bite of the alcohol and cuts he hadn't remembered getting. You and I are going to get along just fine.
Dean pulled a face, but Bobby only examined Sam sharply.
Bobby'll do, son. They explained what had happened in more detail.
Well, you fellows are standing in the center of a whirlwind, let me tell you that,
Bobby said, before telling them about a nationwide spike in demonic possessions. They were mapping the possessions against John's records of the mother and child burnings when the door came off its hinges, crashing to the floor, and Arba stalked in over it.
Congratulations, she said. You've just killed another one of your friends.
Bobby flew backwards into a desk, whimpering as his back bowed. She smiled and stepped forward. Then she halted, frowning, and Bobby fought back to his feet, ignoring the books and papers that spilled to the floor behind him.
Demons, Bobby said, shaking his head and rubbing gingerly at his back.
What the fuck? Arba spat, lunging forward only to bounce off the barrier created by the devil's trap above her head. Dean sniggered.
John Winchester, where is he?
Sam asked. Sam didn't believe that John was still alive. He was too much of a variable. But Dean wouldn't believe it until he saw the corpse.
Dead, she said. With any luck, he's already being sodomized by my closest friends. He probably likes it. I hear that sort of thing runs in the family.
Dean took out Bobby's flask and flung an arc of holy water across her face. She hissed and her eyes went full black.
Sam knows it's true. I stuck my fist into his stomach and I pulled out his guts. Dean shook off Bobby's hand, taking two quick steps that nearly brought him across the lines to finding the devil's trap. Dean! Sam pointed up. Let me do this, okay? Dean regarded him the way he might have examined a shotgun for task suitability. Sam didn't flinch. He'd asked for it. Exercise her, Dean said. Do it slow, until she talks. A freestanding exorcism would just remove the demon from the possessed person. But an exorcism in a devil's trap, as Sam understood it, would send the demon back to hell. Hell wasn't fun, even for demons. Even assuming John was dead, he owed the man at least a hunter's pyre. He began reciting. Arba cursed and gibbered, bashing herself up against the binding circle, even though her fists flared with fire whenever she made contact with the edge. As he finished the first prayer, she roared. He leaned in close, careful not to get even a hair within the circle. Got a better answer for me? Daddy's gonna take your skin off for doing this! Okay, then, he continued, until she was collapsed on the floor, jerking like a landed fish. Her eyes fluttered and her blood smeared across her cheeks, and he had to remind himself that she was one of the Nephilim, not a victim. He stopped when she seemed about to lose consciousness entirely. John Winchester, he said. Jefferson City, she gasped. Do better, he suggested. Blood was pooling at the corner of her mouth, spreading out on the floor like a time-lapse photo of a flower. Sunrise Apartments, she managed. Dean grunted. Finish it, he said. No, she whimpered. But why she'd expect better from humans, Sam couldn't imagine. Now that there was no reason to delay, he hurried through the rest of the exorcism. The Latin thrummed through him like an electric current, charging him even as Arba convulsed. A black cloud spewed from the girl's mouth, abandoning the body, and rushed towards the ceiling, but it was caught in the devil's trap. It circled like a miniature tornado, then turned white around the edges and collapsed in on itself with a clap and a rush of displaced air. The only sound was the hitching, choking breaths of the girl on the floor. Fuck me, Dean breathed, pushing past Sam and dropping to his knees. Call 911. They all knew that the victim couldn't possibly survive. She'd probably broken most of her major bones in Chicago, and she'd been shot in the chest hours ago. But Dean gathered her in his arms and propped her up, his movements so gentle she might not even have noticed them amidst all her other hurts. She blinked up at Sam. Thank you. The words brought a new flood of red from her lips, coating her teeth and her chin and dripping down to her collar. Then she died. Dean held her there for a minute, staring down at her forehead. Slowly, carefully, he used his thumbs to close her eyes. You can lay her out on the kitchen table, Bobby suggested. We'll bury her later. Her name might have been Meg Masters, Sam said. She might have family that... people who want to know. Bobby sighed and tugged at his cap. I'll see what I can do. Dean picked the girl's body up, just like he was going to carry her across the threshold, and took her out of the room. They didn't say a word until Dean returned. Somehow he'd acquired a streak of her blood along one cheek. So, Sam said, I guess we go to Jefferson. Yeah. Dean turned to Bobby. There's something I've been wanting to try. You got a laser printer?